In pursuing the goal, there must be seemingly insurmountable obstacles. If it doesn't seem impossible for the hero to get what they want, people won't care as much. Our primary goal as storytellers is to elicit emotion, and you can't do that without conflict. Michael Haig showed me the patterns of conflict that are consistent with almost all Hollywood films. There are 5 turning points that create the emotion in almost all films. As you review each one, think about every movie you've seen, and how they fit into these 5 turning points of conflict. 1. The new opportunity. After you share the character's backstory, some event causes the character to physically leave where they are and start the journey. This new opportunity is what sets them off to achieve their desires. This leads our hero into a new situation that seems good at first, until they move into turning point number 2. 2. Change of plans. At some point, the original desire will transform into a very specific, visible goal with a clearly defined endpoint. This is where the hero's outer motivation is revealed. From here, they will start to make progress toward that goal until they hit turning point number 3. 3. Point of no return. At this point, the hero must fully commit to reaching the goal. Up to this point, they've had opportunities to turn back. But something happens here that makes this a do-or-die situation. It's no longer a should, it's a must. The hero must burn their old bridges and dive in with both feet, or turn back forever. This forces them to start moving into more complicated situations with higher stakes, which lead to turning point number 4. 4. The major setback. Something happens to the hero, and we believe that all is lost. This event initially leaves the hero with no chance of success, but then we see a small glimmer of light. The hero has only one option. He has to take one last all-or-nothing shot at the desire. This leads the hero to the final push that drives him to turning point number 5. 5. The climax. Now our hero must face the biggest obstacle of the entire story and determine their own fate. The journey of achievement will be resolved once and for all, and the journey of transformation will be revealed. Then we move into the aftermath of the story. The hero's new life is revealed, and the journey is complete. Isn't that cool? Look at almost every successful movie, and you will recognize the pattern of the hero's 2 journeys. When I first learned this whole process, I got really excited, and honestly, a little overwhelmed. So I tried to find a way to simplify it, but not lose out on the key elements needed to cause emotion and create an epiphany. And that's when we created these epiphany bridge scripts that I now use dozens of times a day. If you learn nothing else from this book, mastering this process will serve you for the rest of your life in everything you do. Secret number 8. The Epiphany Bridge Script. Now that you understand the concept of the Epiphany Bridge, and you've also seen the structure of the hero's 2 journeys, we have everything we need to start creating powerful Epiphany Bridge stories. The Epiphany Bridge script follows a similar path as the hero's 2 journeys, but I built it in a way that makes telling your stories very simple. I have this on my desk and I use it all the time when I'm telling my stories. You'll be telling a lot of stories, so mastering this script will become one of the most important things you could ever do. Let me jump in and explain how it works. An Epiphany Bridge story has 8 core sections that pull you through the hero's 2 journeys. I have a question that goes with each section, and answering each question actually creates the story for me. I will go into more depth for each of the following questions, but let me tell you quickly how it works. 1. The backstory. What is your backstory that gives us a vested interest in your journey? 2. Your desires. What is it you want to accomplish? A. External. What is the external struggle you are dealing with? B. Internal. What is the internal struggle you are dealing with? 3. The wall. What was the wall or problem you hit within your current opportunity that started you on this new journey? 4. The epiphany. What was the epiphany you experienced and new opportunity you discovered? 5. The plan. What was the plan you created to achieve your desire? 6. The conflict. What conflict did you experience along the way? 7. The achievement. What was your end result? 8. The transformation. What was the transformation you experienced? For many of you, that outline and those questions will be enough to give you the framework to tell any story. But I wanted to dig a little deeper into each question so you have a really clear understanding on how to answer those questions. The backstory. What is your backstory that gives us a vested interest in your journey? Most good stories start with the backstory. For an epiphany bridge, that means remembering where you were before you had your big aha. Go back to that time and place, and remember the circumstances that caused you to start on your hero's journey. Usually, this backstory starts at about the same point where your listener is in their life right now. They desire the same result that you have already achieved, but when they see you as the expert and see what you've accomplished, it can be really hard for them to relate to you and trust you. That's why you must come down from your positioning as an expert and return to the beginning, where you are struggling with the same things they are. When they see that you were once where they are now, they will have faith that you can take them where they want to go. Your desires. What is it you want to accomplish? When you created your plot statement, you learned about the three foundational elements of every good story: character, desire, conflict. Here is where you talk about what it is that you desired the most. What most people miss is that there are almost always two types of struggles keeping you from what you desire the most: the more surface-level external struggles, and more importantly, the deeper internal struggles that you and your listeners are experiencing. What is the external struggle you are dealing with? The external struggle is what drives the journey of accomplishment, the hero's first journey. It's tied to your desire and is usually based on one of the goals you learned about earlier: to win, to retrieve, to escape, or to stop. People are usually willing to share their external struggles. I'm trying to lose weight, but I can't give up carbs, or I want to start my own company, but I just can't find the time. But these are rarely the real issues they are dealing with. To find out the true cause of their pain, you need to dig deeper and share your internal conflicts. What is the internal struggle you are dealing with? The internal struggle is the journey of transformation from fear to courage, the hero's second journey. This is the root cause of your struggles. Sometimes it's hard to share or even know what the actual internal struggles are. But if you're willing and able to get vulnerable and share your internal struggles, this will build rapport faster than anything else you can do. Why? Because your audience also shares these same internal struggles. Most people never talk about them, but when they hear you get vulnerable and expose what you are really struggling with, the audience will form an almost instant connection with you. I found that the secret to identifying people's internal struggles is to take their external struggle and ask them, why, about 5 or 6 times. Keep drilling down until you get to the real reason they want to change. Here's a hint. It's usually tied to love, or status, or both. For example, if someone tells you they want to lose weight, ask them, why? Well, because I want to be healthy. Why? Because I have 3 kids, and I want to keep up with them. Why? Because by 5 p.m., I'm completely out of energy, and I just want to lie down. Why? Because I don't want people to think I'm a bad mom. Notice that the first few reasons are almost always tied to status. Why? Because I want my kids to know that I love them. Why? Because I never knew whether my mom loved me. Boom. Notice that this one is tied to love. Or if someone wants to make money, ask, why? So I can get a bigger house and my wife can quit her job. Why? So that I can provide a better life for my family. Why? Because my kids are in daycare and I really think they should be home with their mom. Why? Because my definition of a successful family is having my wife stay home with my kids. Why is that important? Because my mom was home when I got home from school, and I want that for my kids too. Why? Because people may think I'm a bad father if I can't provide this way for them. Notice status reason here. Why? Because I want my kids to love me and look up to me. There it is again. The internal struggle is not that they want to make money. It's that they want their kids and spouse to love them. They want love, security, status. As you're telling the story, touch upon the external, because that's what they're willing to acknowledge, but then share your internal struggles too. Those people who are dealing with the same internal struggles will have instant rapport with you, and you'll be speaking to them at a subconscious level. They'll be thinking about feelings they've never really shared in the past, but know are true. When you get to the end of the story, typically you've solved the external struggles and accomplished what the hero has set out to do. But for your story to be really impactful, the hero needs to have done more than just accomplish their goal. They need to have become someone different in the process. In fact, sometimes it's even more powerful if the hero does not reach their initial goal. Lightning McQueen didn't win the Piston Cup. Rocky Balboa lost to Apollo Creed in Part 1, but that is why we love those characters so much. Even though they failed at their external goals, both of them won their internal struggles, the journey of transformation. Michael Haig said that the internal journey is all about the death of our identity and the rebirth of our essence. Our internal struggles are about us holding on to these things that we're attached to, such as love, our status, our identity. If you took away all those things, what is left would be your essence. Realizing that your kids love you no matter what, and that others don't really care about your status that much, that is the essence of happiness. So, while we want our hero to achieve his goal, it's more important that he becomes someone different along the way. There has been a death of his internal struggles and a rebirth of something more. The wall. What was the wall or problem you hit within your current opportunity that started you on this new journey? The backstory builds rapport with the character, then takes the listener to the moment of frustration that causes our hero to start on their journey. That wall is the frustration you felt because of the current opportunity you have been using to try to accomplish your desires. This old opportunity is not working and is the reason you, as well as your listeners, are willing to go on a journey to try something new. This is what drives the emotion for the listener and sets up the correct circumstances for them to experience the epiphany. Something happened on your journey that has kept you from your desire. The wall is often a point of frustration, fear, or hopelessness. So, be sure to spend time here describing how you felt. This will help to get them into the same state you were in when you had your big epiphany. The epiphany. What was the epiphany you experienced and new opportunity you discovered? So far, the hero has been introduced, we know what the ultimate desire is, and we also know the wall their current opportunity has created that is keeping them from their goal. This is the point where something happens that shows them the path they need to follow. It could be a person who helps them understand something. It might be an idea they had while reading, or it could be a breakthrough they discovered while trying to overcome conflict. Something happened that gave them the epiphany, which changed their perception of reality. Now that you've had this epiphany about what you needed to do, what was the new opportunity it led you to? The epiphany is the thought or the idea, and the new opportunity is the vehicle you've decided to step into to accomplish that goal. The plan. What was the plan you created to achieve your desire? Now that you've had the epiphany and you've learned about the new opportunity, now we talk about the plan you've created to see if this new opportunity will lead you to what you desire the most. What is the plan? And then, What are the steps you took to get to your goals? Inside this plan, you are inevitably going to run into conflict, which is where we start to get the emotion from the story. Remember, it isn't the desire of the character that causes the emotion. It comes from the conflict they experience while they are trying to reach that goal. The conflict. What conflict did you experience along the way? After the hero develops a plan, they move forward on it until something happens. They start to run into conflict. We call this the point of no return, because before this point, they could have easily just walked away from the plan and things would have been okay. Here, something happens where they must either decide to go back to their old life or burn the boats and keep moving forward. This is where you take the step of faith out into the dark, only to find that there's a light just a little further ahead. Most people are so scared of executing on an idea, an aha, an epiphany, that they never move forward. In spite of all the reasons you may have said no in the past, this time, it's different. This is when the desire shifts from a should to a must. You move from, I should lose weight, to, I must lose weight, or, I should start a business, to, I must. This will sound like a battle cry to your prospects because they too have been shoulding for too long. It's time to finally make the change once and for all. They will see you as someone who successfully took a stand and shifted from should to must, and you will inspire them to do the same. Describe for them the moment you made the shift, including how it felt inside. In all good stories, after the hero has moved past the point of no return, things start to fall apart. They discover the journey isn't as easy as they had assumed in the beginning. If they had known all the pain they'd have to go through, they might never have started the journey at all. Describe the major setback and conflict you experienced that made you feel like all was lost. But then, there was a glimmer of light, one last way you could accomplish your goal. You alter your plan and go for one last final push. The achievement. What was your end result? After your final push, something happens. Either you achieve your external desires, or you don't. Share the aftermath of what happened, so people can see the results that you got from the new opportunity. The transformation. What was the transformation you experienced? Here, you talk about who you became through this process. This is the resolution of your internal struggles, and is the death of the hero's identity and the rebirth of your new belief systems. As you'll hear in the next secret, the goal of all good stories is to break old belief patterns and rebuild them with new ones. When you create your stories this way, you are helping people to break free from their old belief systems and create a new future. That is the goal of a good Epiphany Bridge story. The Epiphany Bridge questions. That's the script for writing an Epiphany Bridge story. We've covered a lot here, so you could understand the power behind each section of the Epiphany Bridge story. But remember that stories are simple by nature. You can make stories more complex by going deeper into the settings, emotions, other characters, etc. But at their core, they follow a very simple progression. Your origin Epiphany Bridge story. As I'm sure you can tell so far, each chapter builds on itself, and each secret gives you the next piece you need in the puzzle. So I wanted to step back and talk about a few things, so you can see where your first Epiphany Bridge story fits. In secret number 5, we talked about the big domino, the one thing you must get them to believe to join your new opportunity. Here is the big domino statement I created for ClickFunnels. If I can make people believe that funnels are the key to online business success and are only attainable through ClickFunnels, then all other objections and concerns become irrelevant, and they have to give me money. Now, obviously, I believe that is true, but why? What was the epiphany I had that made that belief become truth for me? That story, the one that made you believe in your domino statement, is what I call the origin story. So, what I want you to do for this chapter is think about your origin story, and then answer the Epiphany Bridge questions. This is the story you will be using often in the sales process, so it's important to take some time and make sure you create it correctly. As an example, I'll tell you my funnel origin story that I affectionately call the potato gun story. 1. What is your backstory that gives us a vested interest in your journey? I was a broke college student athlete trying to make money online. I learned that people were making money selling information products online, so I created a DVD teaching people how to make potato guns and started to sell it. I was using the extra money I made from our potato gun sales to keep wrestling so I wouldn't have to drop out of school. 2. What is it you want to accomplish? I wanted to be able to support my wife so she wouldn't have to work, and we could eventually start our family. A. What is the external struggle you are dealing with? The external struggle was that I was only making a few dollars a day, and many days I actually lost money, so I wasn't able to make enough money to support her, let alone a new baby. B. What is the internal struggle you are dealing with? The internal struggle was that my wife was supporting me. I was supposed to be the man in the relationship, but my wife was working two jobs while I was going to school, wrestling, and living out my dreams. I felt like a failure as a husband. 3. What was the wall or problem you hit within your current opportunity that started this new journey? The problem was that Google had changed their algorithms and increased their ad costs. Suddenly, my little potato gun website was no longer making any money, so I had to turn it off, which literally killed my only source of income. 4. What was the epiphany you experienced and new opportunity you discovered? I met a friend who told me about how he was adding upsells to his products. By doing that, he was able to make more money from every customer who came in, and therefore, all his websites started working again in spite of Google's increased costs. I learned that normal websites weren't enough anymore to make money online. You needed an actual sales funnel. So I found someone who was selling potato gun kits, and I partnered with them and started selling them as an upsell. After I added a potato gun kit as an upsell for the DVD, I started making money again. I was spending about $10 a day in ads and making $50 or $60 back. That's when I realized that the secret to making money online was creating sales funnels. 5. What was the plan you created to achieve your desire? My plan was to start creating sales funnels in other markets that had better potential to make money than the potato gun market. I started creating funnels and selling products in the weight loss market, but we didn't stop there. We then created and started selling supplements to people who suffered from diabetic neuropathy. After that, we created funnels in the couponing, dating, and parenting markets, and others. 6. What conflict did you experience along the way? Each new funnel we created took between 6 to 8 weeks to create, on average. We had a team of 8 full-time people, including designers, programmers, and copywriters, just to get one funnel live. We had to glue together about 13 different products just to create one funnel. On average, our costs to get one funnel live were about $30,000, and then only about 1 out of 10 would actually recoup that money. It took a lot of time and money to find another winning funnel. 7. What was the end result you achieved? We ended up getting so frustrated that we decided to create a platform that would make it really easy for us to create sales funnels. The project nickname when we started was ClickFunnels. We thought if we could build something that would make it possible to build in one day what used to take us 6 to 8 weeks, we'd be really happy. After 8 months of programming and every penny I'd ever made, we created ClickFunnels. I can now build in an hour, by myself without any tech people, what used to take me and my team of 8 guys 6 to 8 weeks, and these funnels run faster and converted way higher. We then started to let other entrepreneurs use ClickFunnels. Within just 2 years, over 30,000 people use ClickFunnels to power their entire businesses. In fact, in 2016, we had 71 people who made over $1 million with a single funnel. 8. What was the transformation you experienced? After creating ClickFunnels, I was not only able to let my wife become a full-time mom, I've also been able to spend a lot less time working because we can create things so quickly. I'm now able to be with my kids and never miss any of the highlights of their lives. Now that you've heard my potato gun epiphany origin story, I want you to think about my big domino statement and see if that story gives you the aha you need to be able to believe this statement. If I can make people believe that funnels are the key to online business success and are only attainable through ClickFunnels, then all other objections and concerns become irrelevant and they have to give me money. If I did this right, then you should believe that you need a funnel to be successful online and that the only way to build one is by using ClickFunnels. If you believe that, then your resistance to buying becomes almost zero. Now that you understand story structure and you've created your first Epiphany Bridge story, in the next section, we're going to dig deeper into the false beliefs people have about your new opportunity, and then look at the stories we need to create to break those false belief patterns. Secret number 9. False belief patterns. We all create belief systems that support our decisions. We've been doing it pretty much from the day we were born. Those belief systems form the foundations for our lives. We create these beliefs to keep us safe and to safeguard our status. And while they've been developed to protect us, oftentimes, they're also the things that keep us from progressing in our lives. When I'm trying to sell someone on my new opportunity, almost instantly, their subconscious mind will start thinking about all the reasons it isn't possible or why it won't work for them. The bad news is that these beliefs can be really strong. Let me explain how these beliefs are created. It all starts with an experience. It could be positive or negative, but immediately after they have that experience, their mind quickly creates a story about what that experience meant. Our brain then takes that story we created and it becomes a belief. It's pretty simple, yet that process has happened tens of thousands of times in your life and has created the person you are today. It's interesting that two people can have the exact same experience, but because of the story they created, it affected their beliefs about it. So you have to understand that when you speak to people about your new opportunity, they will bring thousands of preconceived beliefs with them that you have to combat if you're going to make the sale. The good news is that when you know what those false belief patterns are, and you understand the experiences and the stories that your prospects have created in their minds, you can actually use Epiphany Bridge stories to replace their old stories, break their false beliefs, and create new ones. Here's a fun exercise to demonstrate how this works. Step number 1. What false chains of belief might your potential customer have about your new opportunity? For example, if you're in network marketing or multi-level marketing, MLM, a false chain of belief might be something like, if I joined a network marketing or MLM program, I could lose my friends. Or if your opportunity is about weight loss, if I try to lose weight, I'm going to be miserable. If you're not able to think of false beliefs that your potential prospects might have, think about the false beliefs that you had before your big epiphany. Step number 2. Now that you have the false belief, the next step is to figure out what experience they had in their lives that caused the false beliefs. What is the most likely experience your prospect had that caused this belief? One time I joined an MLM, I tried to sign up my parents and they got mad. I tried to lose weight last year, had to cut out carbs and I was miserable. Step number 3. What is the false story they are telling themselves now that's creating doubt about your new opportunity? My story is that people have to bug their friends and family to have success in network marketing. My story is that I have to give up things that make me happy if I want to lose weight. Step number 4. Now it's your job to find an epiphany bridge story, usually in your own life, but it can also work if you share someone else's story, that shows how you once had a similar belief, but because of this new story, you now have a new belief pattern, and that old story you were telling yourself was wrong. I also thought I had to give up friends if I joined an MLM, but then I learned that you can actually generate leads online. The internet is full of people who want to join my program. So I can grow my team without involving my friends or family. I also thought I'd have to give up things that make me happy to lose weight. But then I learned about ketosis and how I can lose weight by drinking ketones instead of cutting carbs. Isn't that exciting? When I first started to understand this concept, I realized that stories are the keys to belief. If I can identify people's false beliefs and tell stories that show them the truth, I didn't need to sell them anything. The stories lead people to the right belief, and they sell themselves. If you've ever heard me speak, you know I share a lot of stories. In fact, during a recent presentation, one of my friends counted how many stories I told within the first 60 minutes. I had guessed the number might be 10 or so, but the total ended up being over 50, almost one per minute. Some longer stories may take anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, while others are often less than a minute. But the key is I use a lot of stories when I'm speaking. They break false beliefs and rebuild the new beliefs people need to make a change. And that is why it's essential for you to start building up your inventory of stories. Here's how you do it. Step number 1. List all the false beliefs your customers might have related to your new opportunity. If you struggle trying to figure them out, think about the false beliefs you had before you got started on this path. It's likely your audience holds those same beliefs. I try to list at least 10, but normally my list will have 20 or more. Step number 2. What experiences might have caused those false beliefs? List an experience for each false belief on your list. Step number 3. What stories are they telling themselves now because of those experiences? It's important to know their stories because your new Epiphany Bridge story will replace those old stories. Step number 4. Think about your own Epiphany Bridge story for each of those false beliefs. What happened to change that belief for you? As you build out these steps for your customers, you'll notice that you had mostly the same beliefs, experiences, and stories. So just go back in time and remember what gave you the big aha that shattered those beliefs for you. Make sure you have a story for each of the false beliefs. If you don't have a personal story, it's okay to use stories from your customers or even people in the news. You might not use all these stories, but you should start building up an inventory of stories to use in the future. After you complete all 4 steps, go back and practice telling your stories using the Epiphany Bridge script from secret number 6. The better you get at telling the stories, the more effective you'll become at persuading others, and you'll know exactly what to say when customers bring up objections. Secret number 10. The 3 secrets. In a perfect world, you would present someone with your new opportunity. You'd know what the big domino was. You'd tell an Epiphany Bridge story to give them a new belief. The big domino would fall, and you'd have a customer or follower for life. Sometimes that does happen. One good epiphany story, and they're all in. Many times, though, once you change that big belief for them, they immediately start coming up with other concerns. This is especially true with more expensive opportunities and big life changes. I found that there are 3 core beliefs that come to the surface and keep someone from buying, even if they believe the new opportunity is right for them. 1. The vehicle. Other false beliefs they may have about the vehicle or a new opportunity you're presenting. 2. Internal beliefs. Beliefs about their own abilities to execute on the new opportunity. 3. External beliefs. False beliefs they have about outside forces that could keep them from success, things beyond the individual's control, such as time or the economy. So, In a more complicated sale, you need to imagine what their false beliefs are related to each of these three things. The good news is that if you completed the exercise in secret number 9, you already have a huge list. You just need to put each of the false beliefs into the correct categories. So, all the false beliefs you found that are related to the vehicle, put them into the first column. False beliefs about their own internal beliefs go in the second column, and external beliefs into the third. Now, decide which of these false beliefs is the core belief, holding them back in each column, and put it at the top. Go ahead and do this exercise now. You'll be using this information throughout the rest of this book. Now that you have your list of false beliefs, you will also need an Epiphany Bridge story to go with each of them. You will be using the stories more when we get to Section 3. For now, just create the list and identify the number one reason in each category that would keep them from taking action on your new opportunity. Let me introduce an example. In my ClickFunnels presentation, I initially piqued their curiosity by sharing my opportunity switch headline we created in secret number 4. How to create a 7-figure funnel in less than 30 minutes without having to hire or be held hostage by a tech guy. Then my goal is to get them to believe in the big domino statement I created in secret number 5. If I can make people believe that funnels are the key to online business success and are only attainable through ClickFunnels, then all other objections and concerns become irrelevant, and they have to give me money. Then I tell them my potato gun Epiphany Bridge story from secret number 8, so they have the first aha that they need to have a funnel too. But as soon as I do that, the core false beliefs about the big domino rise to the surface. False belief number 1, the vehicle. Funnels sound cool, but I don't understand how they would work for me. False belief number 2, internal beliefs. I'm sold on funnels, but I'm not technically inclined, so I don't think I could build one. False belief number 3, external beliefs. I think I could build a funnel, but even if I did, I don't know how to drive traffic into it. Now that I have the three core false beliefs, I have to find the Epiphany Bridge stories that will break them. False belief number 1, I don't understand how it would work for me. Epiphany Bridge stories for false belief number 1. For this, I tell them my Tony Robbins and Porter Stansberry stories, showing them about modeling success, as well as my funnel hacking story about how we modeled the Marine D3 funnel to build our Neuracell funnel, and how they can do that with any successful funnel in their market. False belief number 2. I'm not technical. Epiphany Bridge stories for false belief number 2. I tell the story about how I used to have a big tech team build funnels that cost thousands of dollars, and how we were able to change that after we built ClickFunnels. I then show them a product demo, so they see how easy it is, even if they are not technical. False belief number 3. I don't know how to drive traffic. Epiphany Bridge stories for false belief number 3. I tell them my story about how I reverse engineer from where my competitors get traffic, so I can easily get traffic from the same places. So I am plugging in my Epiphany Bridge stories that I created in secret number 9 that will break their core chains of false belief. Finally, I rewrite each of those false beliefs and the stories that go with them into a secret that causes curiosity so people will want to listen. Curiosity is the key. Here is how I rewrote my three core false beliefs into my three secrets. Secret number 1, funnel hacking. How to ethically steal over $1 million worth of funnel hacks from your competitors for under $100. Secret number 2, funnel cloning. How to clone a proven funnel inside of ClickFunnels in less than 10 minutes. Secret number 3, my number 1 traffic hack. How to get the exact same customers who are currently going to your competitors to start coming to your funnel instead. Now that you have all these elements, you have the foundation you need to start creating your sales presentation in Section 3. Do you see the power behind what you've created here? You've identified the one big domino that will get people to believe in your message, as well as the three core false beliefs that are holding that domino up. In the presentation you will be creating in the next chapter, you'll use stories to systematically knock down each of the beliefs holding up the big domino. When all three of the core false beliefs have been knocked down, the big domino tumbles. When that happens, you have introduced the belief necessary for them to take action. It's all about breaking the false belief patterns holding your prospects back and rebuilding true beliefs. In section 3, I'll tell you how to take these conceptual strategies and create the tactical pieces you need to make the sale. Section 3. Your moral obligation. Section 1 was all about creating your own mass movement. In section 2, you learned more about how to build up your followers' beliefs so you can introduce them to new opportunities that will change their lives. In this section, we'll shift gears and talk about sales. One of my mentors, Jay Abraham, said that if you believe in the product or service you're selling, then you have a moral obligation to try and serve your customers in every way possible. Often, we make the mistake of thinking that because our content is so good, people will automatically follow us and pay for that information. Unfortunately, that just isn't true. One great example of this is Inner Circle member Justin Williams. His company flips more than 100 houses per year, netting over $1 million. And the best part is, he does it all in under 5 hours per week. So Justin decided to take his expertise, create a course, and sell it. His story and the proof he had was amazing. Yet, even though he tried selling it for over a year, almost no one bought the course. He was shocked, because this had changed his life, and he knew it would for other people too. He couldn't figure out why no one would buy it. Then he and his wife, Tara, decided to join my inner circle to learn how to sell their program. By mastering the strategies in this section, they took this little coaching company they had almost shut down to over $1 million within just 8 months. The term sales sometimes has a negative connotation, but when you layer sales on top of the strategies I've already shown you, this process becomes simple. I'm going to tell you how to take the new opportunity and stories you've created and weave them into a presentation that will convert your listeners into customers. The script you will learn over the next 6 secrets took me over 10 years to create and master. It's now been used by hundreds of entrepreneurs just like you to sell large groups of people, products, and services in the shortest amount of time possible. I still remember the first time I saw somebody sell a product on stage. They did a 90-minute presentation teaching about a concept, and then, at the end, they made the crowd a special offer. I watched in amazement as hundreds of people ran to the back of the room and gave this person thousands of dollars. It was so exciting, and as I was counting how many people signed up and multiplying it by his program fee, I realized that he had made over $100,000 in just 90 minutes. I knew at that moment that I had to master that skill. So, at my very first speaking engagement, I prepared a presentation that I knew was going to be amazing and would cause people to run to the back and sign up for my new program just like I had seen others do before me. I finally got on stage, nervously gave my presentation, and made a special offer at the end. But what happened next was shocking to me. Crickets. Nobody moved. No one bought anything. It was so humiliating, I spent the rest of the weekend in my hotel room hiding and eating Haagen-Dazs and coconut shrimp and watching movies, because I couldn't face the other speakers or attendees. It was a total bomb. I was so embarrassed. I swore I'd never speak or sell from the stage again. I was going to sit behind my computer and just sell things online. But I discovered that the skills I needed to sell online were the same skills I was lacking when I spoke from the stage. So I decided to humble myself and learn. I didn't want to learn from people who were good speakers, but rather from people who could actually sell from their respective platforms, such as stage, teleseminars, webinars. There's a huge difference between the two. What I discovered from the best people in the business was that teaching the best content actually hurt sales. But learning how to identify, break, and rebuild false belief patterns got people to take the action they needed in order to change. I learned how to tell stories. I learned how to structure offers and so much more. Then, for 3 years, I stood on stages all around the world in front of thousands of people and tested the presentations over and over and over again. I watched closely to see which topics, in what order, would make people run to the back of the room with their credit cards in hand. I also paid attention to what slowed my sales. Then one day I decided I was tired of traveling and leaving my family behind. So I quit speaking from the stage, despite the fact that I could bring in $250,000 or more from a single 90-minute presentation. Instead, I transferred those selling skills to the online environment. I tested my script on teleseminars and then webinars. I used it for video sales letters, Facebook Live presentations, and more. Each time I presented using this script, I'd watch the response and make tweaks. I did it over and over again for years. A few years ago, I started teaching this script and process to my Inner Circle members. They implemented the script in all sorts of different markets. Dozens of them have now become millionaires using this exact same script. It works. It's perfect. It's worth mastering if you really want to get your message to your market. Secret number 11. The stack slide. Before I ever start selling anything, my first step is to create an irresistible offer. This is the product I am selling at the end of my presentation. I do that with something I call the stack slide. This is where I stack up everything a customer gets when they decide to buy, including all the bonuses and extras. To start this process, I normally stand in front of a whiteboard and write down everything I could create for my dream customer to get them their desired result. I spend a few hours brainstorming everything I can think up, from providing a cool template to speed up their success, to flying to their house and helping them in person. After my initial brain dump, I sit down and create the stack slide. I add in the coolest ideas from the whiteboard that I'd be willing to deliver for the price I have in mind. Every item on the stack slide has a value attached to it. The goal is to show that you're giving 10 times as much value as you're asking for in price. So if you're selling a $97 product, you want the stack slide to add up to at least $997, preferably more. If you're selling a product for $997, then the value needs to be at least $9,997. Some people get concerned about assigning a value to each of the offer components. Think of it not as the value you'd sell it for, but the value they get from it. What will the results from each element be worth to them? Over the years, I've developed 6 types of elements that work best in my offers. Element number 1. The Opportunity Switch Masterclass. The first thing to include on your stack slide is the actual system that teaches them the new opportunity. This is what you will teach your beta group during your free masterclass. After you teach it once for free, it will be fleshed out in more detail in the actual course you'll be selling, or it could just end up being the recordings from your beta masterclass. Element number 2. The tools. As someone participates in your masterclass, what are some tools you can give them to make the process easier for them and help them succeed? A tool can be something complex, such as software, one of the best tools, or something more simple, such as a template they need to fill in or checklists to follow. One of my Inner Circle members, Liz Benny, sells a masterclass for people who want to become social media managers. She gives away all her contracts so her students don't have to hire expensive lawyers or come up with their own. While they certainly could draft their own, and she could teach them how to do that in the training, it's more valuable to just have them already done. Basically, she's selling a byproduct of her own business. She's already created the contracts for herself, so it's no extra work to offer them to others who are learning the same process. What byproducts have you created that you could offer your customers? Extra training is rarely a good stack item because most people assume that more training equals more work. People want tangible assets that make the core training easier to implement. Scripts, templates, cheat sheets, checklists, timelines, and schedules are all valuable tools you could create. Tools often have a much higher perceived value than the actual masterclass they paid for, so it's worth investing some time to make something awesome. Element number 3. Tangible number 1, related to the vehicle. What false beliefs do your customers have about the vehicle or new opportunity that you're presenting to them? What would keep them from believing that this vehicle is right for them? What tangible thing can you create to help them change their belief? I love creating case studies or examples to include as this bonus. If I were creating a product about flipping houses on eBay, I'd go and find 20 to 30 examples of me doing this process or case studies of my students having success with it. I'd put them together into a case study booklet or video training that people could watch or read as proof that the vehicle works and to get a better insight about how others are doing it. The more belief in the new opportunity I can create, the more likely they will be able to achieve the same results. Element number 4. Tangible number 2. Related to their internal struggle. Once they believe the vehicle is right for them, what beliefs do they have about themselves that make them think they can't succeed? They might believe in the new vehicle, but they don't believe in themselves. So you need to create something specific to help them overcome these false beliefs about themselves. Maybe they think they're not technically inclined. What can you create to show them how to hire the right tech people? Maybe they believe they've never been able to stick to a diet. What tangible can you create that will help them overcome this internal struggle? Sometimes, this element will be specific training that goes beyond what's in the masterclass. It could also be tangible tools or templates that will give them the confidence to realize they can actually do it. One of my best-selling offers, my funnel hacking offer, taught people how to build funnels. While it was easy to get people to believe that funnels were the future, they often didn't believe that they could actually build a successful sales funnel on their own. I discovered that one of their biggest fears was writing the copy for the funnel pages. So for this element, I gave people my copywriting course, as well as all my templates and swipe files, so they can easily complete that part of the process. Element number 5. Tangible number 3. Related to an external struggle. This is usually the last thing holding someone back from getting results. They believe that the vehicle is right, they believe they can do it, but there is still some outside force that might make it difficult for them to succeed. This outside force might be a bad economy, lack of time, or something else outside their direct control. For my funnel hacking offer, getting traffic was the big external struggle everyone had. They believed in the vehicle, they believed in themselves, but had fears that no one would ever click into their funnels. So we created a video course showing them how to drive traffic into their funnels. For your opportunity, think about what outside things might possibly keep people from success, then create something to help eliminate or minimize that excuse. Element number 6. Exclusive bonus. Finally, we need to create something that will cause urgency and scarcity. In my ClickFunnels presentation, I offer an upgraded account for those who sign up before a certain deadline. In my High Ticket Secrets course, I give the first 10 people a consult call with one of my sales guys. You can also give them personal access to you via an accountability group, a phone consultation, or a mastermind event. Once you have your stack slide assembled, you've got an irresistible offer. A vehicle for real change. In the next secret, you'll learn the script used to present and sell this offer. Secret number 12. The perfect webinar. I hesitated to call this secret the perfect webinar because I don't want you to think this script only works for webinars. It was initially created for webinars under that name, but since then, we've successfully used it for video sales letters, teleseminars, webinars, stage presentations, email sequences, and more. It should probably be titled The Perfect Presentation, but our community has adopted the name The Perfect Webinar, so we'll keep it the same. Just don't forget that this script can and should be used in all selling situations, not just webinars. In this secret, I'll break down the script process, then in the next three secrets, we'll walk through it step by step. Everything covered so far will be plugged into specific sections of the script. Yes, there is a method to my madness. And while it may seem like we're doing a lot in this script, there's just one goal. Get them to believe one thing. That's it. If you ask someone to believe in more than one thing, your sales will suffer. Jason Fladlin once explained, "The idea is to have a single point of belief that your message is built around and is emphasized over and over and over again from a variety of different angles." The big domino I mentioned earlier, that is the key thing they need to believe. The whole presentation is created to knock down that one domino, and that's it. The three secrets you're about to learn are not new things you're trying to get them to believe. They are the tools you use to attack the domino from a variety of different angles. That is the key to the perfect webinar. When you understand this, you're ready to build out your presentation. There are a lot of moving pieces in this script, and every single one of them is there for a specific reason. Make sure you don't leave anything out. Before we dive into each individual element, let's look at an overview of the whole process. There are four major parts. Part 1. The introduction / building rapport. This is where you'll welcome people to the presentation, build rapport, pique their curiosity, and get them excited. Also, this is where you start actually persuading people. That doesn't begin at the close, that begins the second you start talking. Part 2. The one thing. During this section, you'll try to pique their curiosity. You'll identify the big domino, the one thing, and tell your first Epiphany Bridge story, your origin story. Right off the bat, you're giving people the same epiphany you had when you discovered the new opportunity. This is your first attempt to knock down the big domino. Part 3. The Three Secrets. Breaking and Rebuilding Belief Patterns. This is the content section of the presentation. You need to identify the false beliefs they have around the following. 1. The vehicle or new opportunity. 2. Their ability to use the vehicle, internal beliefs. 3. The number one thing they believe is keeping them from getting started, external beliefs. You already identified these earlier, so all you have to do is tell Epiphany Bridge stories that break their false belief systems and rebuild them with the truth. Notice that the three secrets are not trying to get people to believe new things. They are simply false beliefs they already have about your one thing. If you knock down these three beliefs through the content section of your presentation, the big domino will fall and they will join your new opportunity. Part 4. The stack. Here is where you move from the teaching to the sales portion of the presentation. Don't worry if you're nervous about this. I'm going to give you a magic sentence that will make the transition seamless and natural. You'll then present your offer in a very precise format we call the stack, and you'll weave in some very specific closes that have been proven to persuade people to take the action they need in order to get results. And yes, you will be using your stack slide during this portion of the presentation. That is the bird's eye view of the perfect webinar structure. After you master it, you'll be able to give a presentation like this on the fly. But it's important to really understand the objectives for each section. So the next three chapters will break down each part of the perfect webinar slide by slide. Secret number 13. The one thing. It's time. Are you ready to put your perfect webinar presentation script together? You have all the foundational pieces you need at this point. So we're just going to go right through the script writing process from start to finish. You're going to write a whole presentation right now. Typically, I create this in either PowerPoint or Keynote. Let's talk about scripting for a minute. When it comes to presenting webinars, there are two kinds of people. Some like to just look at bullet points on the slide and improvise. And others like to have an entire script written out that they can just read word for word. Personally, I'm in the first group. However,